Today's reading was written by Sean Neil Barron and is called A History of Church. One day, your church was born. Maybe it was a gathering of saints called together for the worship of a wrathful God, ceaselessly praying between bouts of decrying the evil of Christmas or dancing. Or maybe a few brave souls answered a notice in the newspaper, curiosity piqued by the announcement of a religion where free thinking and tolerance were bedrocks. No matter how it happened, your church was born. A gathering of people, humble, caring, anxious, and quirky, all at the same time, who covenanted to be with one another on the journey of life, death, and everything in between. And so it began, a faithful few, beautifully imperfect, called to that central task, that human task of connecting, loving, and serving. It was just a baby, and yet it was thrust deep into the human condition, tasked to hold the minds and souls, bodies and hearts along the roller derby of disease and birth, infighting and joy and Christmas pageants. Sometimes all of those at the same time. They gathered to hear the world broken open for insightful sermons, rejuvenating music, and a community whose fierce devotion to each other's well-being rivaled a mama bear's for her cubs. But it wasn't always like that, of course. There were the trying times. And I don't just mean Phyllis or Jack, those stubborn but lovable souls who inhabit the netherworld of committee meetings. No, I mean the trying times, when the church almost split in half over the war of integration, or when the mill left the town vacant, or when the minister crossed that line and the people couldn't speak about it for decades. But somehow you were still here, still in the town common, still in the church that everyone recognizes, still the ones that show up every time you were called on, still using the communion silver until you voted to sell it. Now people came, new people came, and they changed things. Small things, big things, things that nobody noticed as it happened until suddenly it was hard to even recognize anything anymore. That was a hard moment, a tearful moment. And other things changed too. The proclamations about God, once heard loud from the pulpit, softened. Wrathful became loving, distant became intimate, mandatory became optional. After the war, the nursery and RE classrooms were overflowing. Each baby dedicated reminded the church of the incredible beauty of life and the gift of this community, all huddled around the baby would bestow upon this child. The history of your church is more than a story of the determination of love to break forth than it is about of tie-dye or chalices, sermon discussions, or social justice committee meetings. The history of the church is the history of human enterprise, evolving in its sights and sounds, yet revolving always around its core. The history of your church is the gift of potential and momentum, of baggage and of personality. The history of your church is the launch pad from which you spring into action or into disarray. Each day, your church is born.
So I want to do a sound check first. Can you all hear me? Raise your hand if you cannot hear me. Well, it's important. I feel that sometimes people don't use microphones properly, and those of us with hearing impairments may not hear clearly, so I would just want to be sure that I have the placement of my mic right. So we're going to try some technology together today. So if something goes wrong, I ask you to forgive me. And if you don't like it, I hope that you will sit with that and wonder what that feeling is all about. But it's only a pad, right? So we're not doing anything too crazy today, I promise. You're supposed to laugh. So I hope by now you know that I love to do interactive sermons, which means that I need you to grab your teal hymnals and turn to hymn number 1051. That's 1051. And we're going to use the chorus of this hymn a few times throughout my sermon. I'm going to sing it once for you. If you know it, please join in singing with me. And then we're going to sing it through together two times. It goes like this. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. Nice. Very good. So be sure to keep those hymnals close, unless you've already memorized the words. So my home congregation in Pennsylvania is a very small congregation of less than 50 members. And while I served as an intern in a congregation slightly larger, around 250, it was not, neither of them were considered historic or grand by any stretch of the imagination. I had visited First Parish in Concord on a few occasions, once for Easter worship, once for a tour. I saw Howard preach in his robe from this grand pulpit. I saw the paintings of all the great ministers to grace the pulpit over hundreds of years. And I thought how magnificent it was, wondering if I would ever grace a pulpit such as this. But amazingly enough, thanks to the intern committee here, I am preaching to you from this grand historic space. And frankly, it terrifies me. When a new minister is ordained, there is a ritual that happens during the ordination called the Rite Hand of Fellowship. This ritual dates back to biblical times. It is a time when an already ordained colleague speaks a few words about being in covenant and relationship with other ministers and with churches, and then offers you their right hand to bring you into the fold of ministry and fellowship with them. The colleague and friend who offered me the right hand of fellowship was the Reverend Jennifer Hamlin Navias. She's the senior minister at the Unitarian Society in Syracuse, New York. In that moment, she reminded me of all of the shoulders that I am standing upon. Shoulders like William Ellery Channing and Hosea Ballou, Olympia Brown and all of the Iowa Sisterhood, Ezra Ripley and Dana McLean Greeley. These stars were offered the right hand of fellowship in their day, and it was an incredible honor for me to be offered the right hand of fellowship. I am standing on all of the shoulders of my colleagues who have gone before. The enormity of that honor hit me during my ordination, and it hit me again standing here in this empty sanctuary, surrounded by the whispers and ghosts of ministers gone by. Join me in singing. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. This chorus that we have been singing, the hymn, also has verses, though I did not want to try it without Beth because it is quite a roadmap to get through. The thing I love most about this hymn is that it names the full expanse of humanity, making room for all, whether you identify as a mother or father or neither, as a brother or sister or neither. We are all men, women, non-binary, part of this human family. And the body of the hymn sounds like this. We are mothers of courage and fathers of time. We are daughters of dust and the sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy and brothers of love. We are lovers of life and the builders of nations. We're seekers of truth and keepers of faith. We are makers of peace and the wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's prayers, and we are our grandfather's dreamings. We are the breath of our ancestors. We are the Spirit of God. As I stand here considering the ministers who have gone before me, I can identify with each of them in the lines of this hymn. We are mothers of courage, it sings. Our Unitarian Universalist and Unitarian Universalist history is full of awe-inspiring women like Antoinette Brown Blackwell, who was the first woman ever ordained to a major Christian religion nearly 10 years before Olympia Brown. She managed to run a church while raising 5 daughters on an annual salary of $300. And she took active and important roles in giving voice to women's rights and the abolitionist movement. It is said that when she was a child in the mid-1800s, our Sister of Mercy, Mary Augusta Safford, often amused her family by preaching on a tree stump pulpit in their backyard. This love for preaching in unconventional gender roles came from the teachings of her father, no less. Mary Safford's mother very much tried to teach her about what she ought to do, but her father was introducing her and her siblings to new and disruptive ideas. Mary became the pivotal figure in an emerging constellation of clergy women who dominated their church's development on the frontier for the rest of that century. Mary Safford and her partner, Eleanor Gordon, were two fiercely independent women who declared that the modern day woman did not have to marry anyone. Safford and Gordon would grow up and move forward together to bring the Unitarian mission and church to the Midwest, where no male clergy wanted to go. These two daughters of dust remind us that we do not have to fit into societal norms in order to make a difference in the world. They broke free from the chains of female oppression and work to make a place for themselves in our world. Join with me. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. While the Reverend Jenny Rankin was eventually given the title minister after serving here as the assistant minister, First Parish in Concord has never called a woman to be their senior minister in their 381 years. There are hundreds of women in ministry whom I admire, but this sermon is not meant to be solely about women. When I preached from this pulpit for the first time last month, I had a mixture of feelings, both that of sheer terror and of awe. The awe that I was standing in this grand historic place on the shoulders of those who have gone before me, and the sheer terror that I was standing in this grand historic place on the shoulders of those who had gone before me. You're supposed to laugh at that too. You guys are a tough crowd. So, So I began to wonder about those men, First Parish and Concord's own fathers of time and sons of great vision. Since 1636, First Parish and Concord has only called 22 senior ministers to this pulpit. 22 in nearly 381 years. To give you something to compare to, today's average length of ministry lasts from 8 to 12 years, compared to the average length of ministries in First Parish at 17 years, though some serving considerably longer. Great ministers of our time, like Peter Bulkley, Daniel Bliss, William Emerson, Ezra Ripley, and Dana McLean Greeley, each served this church for a number of years. You will find Ezra Ripley's portrait above the mantle in the parish hall. I encourage you to go spend some time with him. He was the longest serving minister of First Parish in Concord, serving here for 63 years, from the age of 18 until his death. And you think I'm young. While he does not carry the title of longest ministry, he comes very close. Howard once told me that upon occasion he spends a little time with Ezra, so I tried as well, and don't you know, he is a really good listener. This rich history in our building intrigued me, so I spent some more time researching these men upon whose shoulders I am standing. I dug through the archives in the Concord Library. I touched actual handwritten manuscripts of Ezra and Barzillai, Daniel and Dana. I reminisced about our Christian history as Puritans when nearly each manuscript of Dr. Ripley's was preaching about Jesus Christ in some way. How we must always hold fast to our faith. His sermons were passionate, foreboding, and forceful, yet nurturing and compassionate. I was struck by how alike our manuscripts looked. I was enamored by how he wrote in this literally tiny, tiny manuscript. He edited right in his manuscript and crossed out and changed. Some words were just lightly crossed out, while others were forcibly removed, scratching them out so I couldn't recognize them. He was so careful with his message. I wonder what he would have done with a computer. You can laugh, it's okay. Dr. Ripley opens his October 16th sermon in 1822 by saying, "By the pen of inspiration, it is recorded that God is true and faithful." I know he did not stand right here. This church was not built during his time, and yet I can feel him here, preaching these words with command and honor and righteousness. The Reverend George Washington Homer wrote about Ezra, saying that Dr. Ripley filled the town to which he ministered. Nearly 50 years, he was the only minister in Concord, with a parish of about 2,000 souls. To me and my contemporaries, he seemed as much a part of the town as its hills and rivers. As a preacher, he was sensible and serious, always moving in the ranges of common thought and practical life. His throne was his character, and he sat upon it, born a king. His throne was his character. I lost my place. One minister who many of you are familiar with is the great Dana McLean Greeley, former president of the American Unitarian Association and first president of the Unitarian Universalist Association. What Dana did for Unitarian Universalism was convince us that we were worthy of being taken seriously as a world-class faith. Several years after his death, the great Theodore Parker spoke these words about him. "He had large talent for religion," Parker says, "loving humanity and God. He loved freedom in all its forms and so became a champion in all of the combats of the day where rights were in question. He had his imperfections, But he was the fairest model of a good minister known to the public. He possessed courage and inextinguishable hope. He is the best example of the power of one man armed only with truth and love. Sing with me. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. So we are the history. We are making the history today, right now, in this moment. This church is formed with the stars who have graced this pulpit over the past 381 years. They are the ones who have formed who we are today. So I ask you, who are you? What song does the universe sing about your life? How do you choose to live in this world? How do you choose to honor the people of whose shoulders you are standing upon? My desire to preach this sermon has been twofold: to remind us here of those whose legacy we are carrying, and to call you into action. How are you going to take something sparkly in your life? Courage, vision, mercy, and love to go out and inspire others to be seekers of truth and keepers of faith. When I titled this sermon, Preaching with the Stars, I was thinking about my ministry and ancestors, my colleagues. But as I stand here in this magnificent pulpit, looking out into this great sanctuary, seeing all of your beautiful, kind, generous, loving faces, I know that the stars I am preaching about do not merely include my colleagues. Here you are in this grand sanctuary among Ezra and Barzillai, William and Johannes, Dana and Howard, the great stars that inspire me to live into the song that the universe sings about my life, hoping that my message and love will inspire you to live into your own song. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. Blessed be, and amen.